to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this episode, we talk to San Francisco-based artist Anne Devine, who incorporates walking in her art practice. Part social activist, part expeditionary, and takes on challenges, some of which are downright scary, all in the name of walking art. The interview was recorded using internet telephony and opens with Anne telling us about the Crosswalk Marathon.
The first piece where I would say where I was a completely walking piece is the Crosswalk Marathon, which I performed on September 10th, 2006. I walked 26.2 miles around basically one block, a few blocks from here from my house. 161 times I walked around the block to use the space that the city had determined needed crosswalks, but then they didn't want to install them because they felt that it wasn't a top priority. So it was about a year long of project, and then the end result was I decided, well, I would use the space where they determined the two crosswalks should be to make the route, and then turned it into a marathon. And then I think 72 or 83 hours or something like that later, the city came and put the crosswalks in. So sort of social protest, sort of art. It's a very busy street. It was a very quiet, kind of sleepy neighborhood. And they've done a lot of development of the area. And basically, the traffic has increased exponentially, but they hadn't been really dealing with the issue of traffic and pedestrian access. I mean, you really just couldn't cross the street, and it's only a block from the graduate school, and it's a very busy area for people who walk around. So I was trying to get them to put a crosswalk in just to paint it so that people driving would slow down or stop.
Now, more recently, I understand you're doing a lot more walking at night. Is this part performance or just to introduce new elements into your art practice?
I think both, really. When up in Canada, I always liked the night, and up in Canada with other artists there, we started walking at night just as it's a different time. I mean, I think that's very, it's a quiet time, and it's a different kind of exploration, and it changes things. I really have been interested in that, like the cloak of night. When I came back, I did a piece that I had been working on in where I walked from Fresno to Kerman, which is in the Central Valley of California, on an old historic road. And then recently I did a long walk in Florida on the Space Coast near NASA at Canaveral National Seashore, which is a performance piece I called This Fabulous Shadow Only the Sea Keeps. That was for Earth Day and kind of a celebration of a lot of natural events that started with a skydive to the land, and then a walk of about 24 miles on the Canaveral National Seashore at night during a meteor shower.
Why did it start with a skydive? I mean, had you ever been skydiving before?
No, this Fabulous Shadow was really specifically about the elements of nature and NASA and things like that, and the meteor shower and Earth Day, sort of a combination of things like that. And I wanted to land on the Earth, like arrive to the Earth in the way of a meteor, but also because of the space, the race for space and things like that. And a friend suggested it. He had been skydiving, and I had developed most of the project in a very short period of time, and he commented he found out about a skydiving place in that area, but I had never been. No, it's not. I'm actually kind of afraid of heights. So it was a method to, I think, explore the space between, you know, that area that I don't really travel in that area. And also to mark the beginning and land on the Earth.
Was it a big adrenaline rush or was it terrifying?
It wasn't terrifying. I was really trying. I had done a lot of research to get familiar with the area because I live in California, and I had never really spent any time at Cape Canaveral or the Space Coast. So I did, and I was fascinated always with the moon and the going into space. So I studied a lot about astronauts and people specifically who had walked on the moon. The 12 individuals who have walked on the moon. And so one of the documentaries I watched in the last few months had an interview with Neil Armstrong, and his heart rate when they blasted off was, I think, around 70. And the other astronauts were up about 140, I think. So I just really was trying to kind of, in my own way, have a personal experience, I think, of clearly I don't think I'll be going to the moon, but of that sort of space thing. And so I was trying to really think of that, like, okay, I just trust the people I was with, and there you go. It was a great ride, I have to say.
How long was the skydive itself?
Just shy of 5 minutes. We went up in the plane, and it seemed sort of long, but I timed it out. I think the free fall was about a little bit less than a minute, and then parachute ride to the ground finished out just really shy. I think it was 4 minutes and 56 seconds or something for the whole, from the time we jumped out of the plane to the time we landed.
I mean, did you walk straight away, or was there a sort of gap between the jump and the...
Yeah, there was a gap, and originally I had intended to jump close, like very close to the region of Canaveral where I was going to be doing the walking. There were some complications with being able to schedule the jump, and so I ended up jumping at another facility, and that required driving there, and we had to come back. So I did have a bit of a break in between, and then I walked in the evening and through the night.
Can you remind us when Earth Day is?
Earth Day is the 22nd of April. So
at what time at that latitude does darkness start to fall?
I started walking around 6 o'clock on the 21st of April, and I walked through the night, and it got dark about 8 o'clock. It was real twilighty, and the sun was setting, and I think it was about 8:30.
And the meteor shower, how do you find out about when a meteor shower is going to happen?
Oh, they're astronomical events, and you can look them up online. They pretty much happen with a schedule. I mean, you can find that out. And so that was one of the things where I was doing this intense research in the beginning, where I was just looking at all the geographical and natural events that were happening that were swirling around and picking some. So I knew, and I have a big interest in meteor showers, so I knew that there was one happening, and that kind of helped shape the performance or the walk, like by giving it a time, like that I would go through the night.
And so tell us, what was it clear sky enough for you to see the meteor shower?
Well, in a weird way, the moon was just a day shy of a full moon, so that's really unideal for meteor shower watching. It was pretty cloudy, so I didn't actually see any meteors, but also I couldn't see much more than 5 feet ahead of me. So,
I mean, can you tell people about temporary loss of sight, how that came about?
I actually scratched my corneas in February while I was training for the walk, and I had a series of viruses and infections in my corneas that made it very difficult for me to see with any clarity.
Okay, so what duration was the walk? It was from 6 in the evening till what time on the 22nd?
I had to break it into two parts because it was on the beach and the sand was very soft. So I knew that I would be taking a break. So I walked from about 6 p.m. till 4:30 in the morning, something like that. And that got me through part of the road at the Canaveral National Seashore and then all the undeveloped seashore along the coast. It was so exhausting. I've trained for marathons and I've walked marathons, but it was very, very grueling. And I actually took a break and went to sleep for the better part of the morning and returned back to the site and walked the last 7 miles later in the day on the 22nd. So it was broken up. That's okay. I mean, ideally, I think it would have been great if I could have done it all in one, but it was so taxing, I guess is the word.
I'm not surprised if, first of all, you had impaired vision and then just done a skydive. I think anyone would have found it taxing to walk all night. So what was the total distance in mileage?
Over 24 miles.
And you obviously had to avoid the tides, too.
Yeah, the tide was going out. I mean, these were all like things I had known. The tide was going out, so the sand was soft. There was a very particular way that you can walk. There's no road. It's very undeveloped. And the beach walk, I had trained on the beach here in California over 4 months, but I was also carrying a backpack, which I had trained with all my water, because it's very unsupported. It's basically wild land, so It was challenging.
So you're not fancying doing that again?
No, you know, it was a great experience. I knew it was an area where historically people had been shipwrecked and explorers like Ponce de Leon had come. And I had all these things going. I was totally by myself. No, there was no contact. I had lost my hearing from jumping out of the plane with a... I had a cold at the time, so I had been ill. So I really couldn't see more than a few feet in front of me, even though I had headlamps and things. I couldn't really hear. I was definitely pushing the limit for walking in sand, which is, I think it's about at least 50% harder or something. So, but I found like it was very, it was a great experience for me too. I was sort of thinking about how people walk these very difficult walks when they're shipwrecked or historically like that, or exploring, or when they're lost and in either in sand or snow, just that, how that happens, how people just sit down and just never get back up again.
I mean, I must say it sounds really grueling. What plans have you got from the work itself? You said you did it alone. Were you videoed at some point, or photographs taken, or have you done sound recordings or taking from it, or was it just the performance itself?
Well, I feel both ways, really. I had fellow artists come with me. He traveled with me, which was great because I couldn't drive or see. So, and he took some photographs. I had a small digital camera. I carried with me a digital video camera, which I used a little bit on the actual seashore part of the walk. But it was so hard, I really didn't. I took some still photographs, and we did a lot of audio recording. But sadly, a few hours after I finished the walk back at the motel, my hard drive crashed and died a very quick and final death. So it's just been kind of a comedy of errors since returning from Florida, because I lost all my data and had to have it recovered for a very costly price. And then I had a corneal infection on top of all that, so I was blinded again. So I'm still, like, now it's June, and I'm really just kind of being able to see and having things back in order, and I haven't really looked at the things. I'll probably end up doing a series of drawings from my experience in the night.
Now that you've set off and done such an incredible expedition or adventure, are you sort of thinking that you've got that out of your system now and you don't need to do that sort of type of walking again? Or have you caught the bug and you think now, boy, I can't wait to get myself into a similar situation?
Well, the next walk that I'm preparing is a reworking of the Donner Party, which is a historical, like, Wagons West route across America, where certain members of the party were snowed in California, and they ended up snowshoeing around 150 miles or 110 miles and were forced into cannibalism to survive. I really like these endurance or difficult walks, but I also, you know, I like the idea of safety. So this new walk will be an interpretation of the Donner Party, and hopefully there'll be a group of 15 artists who are able to take the walk, and it won't be a full, I don't think we'll be starving ourselves to death.
Eating each other.
No, there's going to be a chef.
I'm not planning on eating each other.
Oh, well. No, but I've been in touch with the Historical Society. They can't establish the route, and so I love it that it's entirely open, and I think it's a great stage for a modern work, and it would be collaborative with other people, which is something I really would enjoy.
Whereabouts in the States is that?
Basically, the Wagons West Trail, where people came across the West to California. There's a route called the Hastings Cutoff. It's through the Sierras, but it's part of the major thoroughfare that people came across with wagons.
What's your sort of definition of a walking artist? How are they different from another artist, or how are they different from another walker?
That's a hard question for me, I think, to determine in a specific answer. I think the people who I would say are walking artists are really just this great community of people who very clearly use walking in their art. I find it interesting to be able to, at this point in my work, to try and fit myself in there and say, I'm a walking artist. I think it's open because a lot of people just incorporate walking into practice, and I'm more of that, like, oh, I don't know. I would love to say I'm a walking artist because it's two great things in one.
This community of walking artists, how can that be encouraged or promoted?
Just networking of communities and more curatorial things, and I know for myself that when I first kind of went, oh, there's such a thing as a walking artist. Wow. Okay. That's great. 'Cause I love to do this. There's just an educational element even within the artist community, I think, or the art world. And then just realizing how open-ended it is. People ask me a lot because my work also before is, I'm not considered a painter or even a video artist. Particularly, I'm kind of a broad spectrum. I have a lot of skills. And if you say I'm a walking artist, then people want to know, well, what are you walking for? And so to try and educate people and actually even educate myself along the way, what does that mean? It's very open, I think, and I think that's a great thing.
Usually I ask the people I'm interviewing if they can recommend a route, but I'm not really sure that I want to hear your recommendations.
You know, I love things like walking the canals, the Regent's Canal, things like that. I love things like that. I'm a very much a pattern walker, so people that come to visit me, they know I've been walking the same walking route in my neighborhood for 14 years. When I go new places, I like to explore by walking on foot. I think just get outside and walk, urban or, you know, just find something that draws you and just follow it.
The pattern walking, is that partly because you have a dog and you take a dog for a walk?
I was always a pattern walker, really. My earliest publication was a walking map of my walking routes in New Brunswick, New Jersey, where I went to art school. If you find a way that's safe for crossing the street, or you kind of, I can set a pattern and then I know what I'm, where I'm going, and I can free my mind. I can, or also if you walk in a pattern, you really start to observe the small details that change from time to time. Oh, that newspaper was here for 3 days, or, you know, this is the person that sits on the porch, or oh, this is the bird's nest. So I love that, really. I need both. I need to be able to go out and do new things, but I really love seeing how things stay the same or change in the same place.
In your local neighborhood, where would you recommend walking?
Oh, that's a tough one. I love to walk along the waterfront. I live in Lower Potrero Hill of San Francisco, and it's really a hugely developed area right now, and they're actually even repatterning the streets. They're developing the shoreline. But I believe they're putting in new parks, so over the next few years it'll be more open and more pedestrian and bike friendly. So a lot of my other walking is places that dogs could go, or dogs and people could go. That's very convenient.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities. In this episode, you've heard from San Francisco artist Anne Devine. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Please follow the links on the talkingwalking.net website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes at talkingwalking.net. Written, recorded, and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities, our graphic artwork was designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music was composed and recorded by Simon Sanders at Easytronic.